Roommates dieses Landes, AWFNR, ist mal wieder am Start. Diese Woche habe ich mich ausgewechselt. Joko weiß nicht, wer dran ist, aber ich habe Chili Gonzales. Ich bin Die-Hard-Fan von Chili Gonzales. Joko noch mal mehr, wie auch immer das geht. Und ich bin mir ziemlich sicher, dass er hoffentlich schnell erkennt, wer es ist. Und dann hoffentlich mit dem einen Ding, also Joko hat zwei absolute Superstar-Features. Das eine ist seine Lache und das zweite ist, wenn er excited ist. Also positive Energie von Joko sprüht auf alle anderen Menschen und ich erwarte nichts anderes als das jetzt in der folgenden Stunde. Ein Gespräch von Chili Gonzales und Joko Winterscheid über deren Wege zum Ruhm. Es wird Englisch sein, das schon mal als Warnung, aber man kann auch ein bisschen Englisch lernen dabei, weil beide sind jetzt keine Muttersprachler im Englisch. Trotzdem sind die Themen super interessant und hoffe ich zumindest. Ich weiß ja noch nicht, worüber sie gleich reden. Und das wird, glaube ich, eine gute Folge. Und es wird ein bisschen unsere Beziehung aufspeisen, denn das brauchen wir. AWFNR, der Karriere-Podcast für Berufsjugendliche, heute mit Chili Gonzales und wird präsentiert von O2, dem sehr guten Netz zum sehr guten Preis.
AWFNR. Oh, jetzt bin ich nervös, jetzt muss ich der okay, super. Ich bin wahnsinnig aufgeregt. Das ist eine besondere Situation für mich, weil das für mich die erste Folge in der Form ist. Mein Name ist Joko. Wer ist denn da?
Große Verspätung.
Große Verspätung?
Ja, ja. Ich warte 15 Minuten, Joko.
Ja, das ist richtig.
Ich bin ein busy man. In 18
Uhr. Oh mein
Uhr.
Gott! Nein, das glaube ich nicht.
18 Uhr muss ich anderes machen. Ich habe einen Termin, Joko. Ich bin deine Ersatz Paul und du machst, dass ich muss 15 Minuten warten.
Chili, du bist es, ja? Richtig, Chili?
Aber du bist Deutsche, du musst pünktlich sein. Das ist.
Ja, ganz kurz, habe ich es schon erkannt? Du bist Chili Gonzales.
Vielleicht, aber du bist zu spät.
Du bist Chili Gonzales. Oh Gott. Oh Gott, ich liebe es.
Ich spiele jetzt 15 Minuten, sodass du kannst jetzt warten.
Dann kann ich mich zurücknehmen. Nein, du musst wissen.
Take 5, dreimal. Take 15, Baby.
Ja, das tut mir leid, du musst wissen, ich bin technisch nicht so versiert. Hätte ich gewusst, dass du nur bis 18 Uhr
aber
kannst.
Ich auch nicht, Joko, aber seit 16.30 Uhr habe ich Google Chrome downloaded, download get, whatever the German fucking word is. And you know, you gotta be prepared, man.
Do we do that in German or do we do that in English? I think for the Germans it will be very weird if I speak English, but I'd be open to talk English with you.
Well, I'll do my best, but we might have to switch around a little bit.
Okay. Oh, das du hast keine Ahnung, wie sehr ich mich gerade freue. Wirklich, das ist. Ich glaube, du hast auch gar keine Ahnung, was du für ein Superhero für mich bist. Ich habe dich gesehen in München beim Konzert. Das hat meine Agentin mir geschenkt, die Tickets. Und ich muss dir ehrlich sagen, das war von allen Konzerten, die ich in meinem ganzen Leben jemals gesehen habe. Da war Molotow dabei hier, Molotow Kowalski.
Auch Alice Sarah Ott, eine klassische Pianistin, war auch da, oder?
Ja, genau, die war auch da. Ja. Es war wirklich, ne? Ich war so blown away, vor allen Dingen aber war ich blown away davon, was du für ein unfassbares Intro gesprochen hast, weil du hast damals so ultra geil gesagt, tonight you're gonna witness the best concert I've ever played. Und dann dachte ich mir so, okay, jetzt bin ich gespannt, warum. Und dann hast du gesagt, weil ich halt bis hierhin eigentlich ja jeden Abend ein Konzert gespielt habe und ja logischerweise in der Evolution der Konzerte, dass heute Abend das Beste sein muss, weil ich das von gestern ja auch noch auf meiner Liste habe quasi. Und das fand ich so einen geilen Satz von dir, dass ich ab da noch größerer Fan war, als ich eh schon war. Und es war wirklich unfassbar. Es freut mich voll, dass wir uns mal sprechen. Das ist irre.
Ja, ich auch. Aber 15 Minuten. I mean, I know you're busy, like, selling chocolate on Bitcoin or something. Like, I know you're a busy guy too, Yoko, Shoko Yoko, but, you know,
But where are you? Are you in Cologne or are you
I'm in Cologne at home in my living room in front of my piano. And the truth is I made time for this because I'm also a fan of yours. And so, you know, I want to make time for you. And we have some friends in common and everyone tells me you're a stand-up guy, as we say. So that's why I'm here.
Ah, oh, I love you for that. Thank you very much. But for me, it's kind of weird because I'm, you know, that moment when you wait for something to happen and then it happens and you're so flattered about the fact that actually you got, as you just said, you take the time for me, because in the end it is exactly that way around, because I would have waited for you for years. I just don't know how to handle it that right now, because I'm more like starstruck. That's something that really seldom happens to me, but I am right now because I just love the fascination. Maybe just, we can start off here and maybe you feel my my thoughts are making a somersault, a gym exercise. No, what is Purzelbaum? Is it? No, it's not somersault.
Oh,
Purzelbaum. You have no idea what Purzelbaum, you know what Purzelbaum is? Yeah.
I think so. A somersault is when you're basically upside down.
Okay. So anyhow, my head is upside down. But you know what I love most about you is that you make things that are, in my eyes, or at least for me, very difficult, look so easy. Because there's no other music I'm listening to than yours on a Sunday morning, because it just brings me down perfectly into that Sunday mood that I think everybody who has a lot to do wants to have. And I wonder if that is happening with you too, if you play the piano. Is it for you? Do you feel like it's a job, or do you feel like, no, that is for me the maybe best exercise to get into another world?
Well, it happens in different stages. So, you know, the first stage is when I was a child and realized I could escape into the piano and into music. Kinda, yeah. And then you get really süchtig from this. You get addicted because life is just better when you're at the piano compared to awkward social world or family bullshit. It's a place to escape to. So that's the first part of it. And that goes very deep and has sort of psychiatric roots in a way. I think if you're healthy and have a good family situation and feel comfortable in life, then you don't need to escape anywhere. But I needed to find somewhere to escape to. And this is where I could go. So that's the first part. But then as I do it as a sort of adult, then, of course, it gets more complicated because I'm aware of having an audience. I'm aware that I'm doing something that is going to meet the world. And that wasn't the case when I was, you know, 10 years old. It was just like, I need this for deep emotional, spiritual reasons. I wasn't even thinking about, is somebody listening or not? Now, of course, if I make music, it can turn into a thing where I'm like, oh, I'm playing something I really like now. What would happen if this met the world? And then begins a whole other way of thinking about it that involves, yes, a lot of craft and very hard work, which I happen to enjoy. And then when it gets to the end of that phase, then you become the child again. And then I try to play it like it's the first time. And that's what hopefully gives you that Sunday morning easy peasy feeling. But you're right. It is a lot of hard work. You can call it difficult or not. I enjoy it, so I don't feel it being difficult. But when the time comes to really record or play in front of people, then, of course, I want to make it look easy because, of course, I want there to be some mystery. And if it feels like I just sat down and played the first thing that came into my head, fucking great. It's not true, but if that's what you believe or what you feel, then I definitely did my job, because I think you're not supposed to feel all my hard work. You should just feel the result.
Yeah, I totally do more feel the result than the work. So that works for me. But in the end, is the situation that you just described, the moment where you realize, oh, that is something that could be released, or that is could be something I could play in front of an audience, does that push you in a way so that you say, hello, I have to even put more effort now in it because I found something that I feel some magic about? Or is it more like, you know, creatively that kind of not stops you, but intimidates you, because now you do feel the pressure to even overachieve maybe the the first moment where you heard these sounds that made you feel magic.
But I love the pressure. It just has to come at the right time. So it's about choosing when you switch from the the subjective artist into the objective entertainer in a way. That's what I see. So I'm an artist when I'm alone pleasing myself. The minute I think about someone else, I've become an entertainer, whether I like it or not. And so I choose to embrace it. I choose to say, let me do the deep, creative, spiritual part that people find so romantic about musicians and artists. Let me give that its proper space. And that usually means, like right now, I'm on time off. Hello, because there's no concerts. So I'm able to play a lot of piano and compose quite a lot without pressure. And there'll come a moment, maybe in June, maybe next November, maybe next year, where I'm going to switch. And then I become the communicator. And that's a whole different mindset. And I love that part also. I think it's just choosing the right moment. I know a lot of musicians, and maybe you have this also with people who do TV and podcasts and comedy, let's say. Comedy is such a special case, and maybe you can tell me how you approach it. I love that when you're trying to make people laugh, it's like a yes or no binary answer of success. You can't really be polite and say, you know, I'm going to fake laugh now, because that's not how it works. But for me, people people can listen and stay polite and not really tell me that my song didn't succeed. But what I like and what makes me eifersüchtig auf comedians is you hear that laugh and you know you did it.
Yeah, but on the other hand, if you don't get it, and I do know that situation more often than the other one, then you kind of suffer on stage, and that is maybe the worst feeling you can have, because then at least myself, I get into a mood of, okay, now I want to show you even more that I'm funny, and then it kind of starts to, I'm taking a spiral downwards in quality of jokes, and that even sometimes, you know, the beginning of the first time somebody's not laughing is most often the end for me.
It's just like, you know, your dick won't get hard, you know, it's horrible.
Yeah, but for instance, you know, because you play the piano, you're sitting on stage in a bathrobe stylish suit thing
from Herr von Eden.
Which I really love, because I think even your appearance, when the moment you enter the stage, is so unique, and then that makes it even more special by listening to the way that you play the piano. What I love about that fact is if you say fuck or shit, you know, that's kind of such a good, you kind of break the rules in that moment. The estimated feeling one has when he or she sees you, is more like, oh, what a classy guy. And then you break that by talking like you just did. In my case, if I use these words, I'm unpolite. I'm not behaving the way people should behave, because maybe small children are listening on TV. So therefore, I also like the whole setup that you chose, because in a way, I'd say, if I would make a guess right now, I wouldn't say that you founded a stage person or invented a stage person. I'd say the person that is sitting at the piano is you. Is that right?
Yes. I mean, it's, I would say it's a part of me that is very well suited to being on stage for those reasons you just said. It's something like it's amplified by a certain fantasy element. So there's something about being on stage. We say you have impunity. It means you can't be punished. I'm sure there must be an amazing German word for that. What do you think it is? Impunity. You know this word?
To be honest, I have to translate it. Impunity. I love the sound of the word. Let me just Google it. What it means if I Google it. Impunity.
Straflosigkeit.
Unschuldig, vielleicht more. Is it that like that?
Oh, in Google Translate, it says Straflosigkeit.
Straflosigkeit. Yeah, but I think there is no Straflosigkeit is a really, I like the harsh sound. Maybe that would be a word where everybody who learns German says, oh yes, that's a typical German word. Straflosigkeit.
I mean, it's basically like keine Preis zu zahlen for bad behavior. And so it means that when I'm on stage, I get to finally act like I wish I could act, maybe in real life. So in some senses, it's a fantasy, but because it's a very intimate fantasy, it's a very true fantasy. And I think that's the most intimate. You also have this with relationships. Yeah. And you can tell someone what your negative and positive fantasies are, then you've really reached a kind of intimacy. So this is, again, a little bit like, don't deny that the stage changes you. That's what I want to tell musicians. Okay. Yeah. So there are, especially in music, I think much less so on TV. Everyone understands that when you're watching TV, you've entered into a different way of behaving, and we accept it and we understand that. It's just watch a sitcom and it's not like reality, and we accept it. And talk show hosts talk a different way than they do in real life. But sometimes with music, there's these musicians who say, ah, I'm not going to be someone different. I'm going to really be my authentic self. But the mistake they make is you can't be. It's like a translation machine. And you have to let the machine do its job, which is to let out the fantasy. So when you're on stage, you are a kind of more animal version of yourself. There's more things that come out that surprise me. I don't plan everything that I say on stage at all.
Perfect.
It's not like a routine I go into. It's more like a tap that I turn on.
Yeah.
And
you go with the flow, obviously.
Yeah. And the musicians who say, oh, I'm just going to dress like I normally dress, I'm going to act like I normally act, they're actually holding something in. They're resisting what should actually happen on stage. They're resisting this Verwandeln, which is very beautiful.
Yeah, happens. Absolutely.
So I give into it. I say, this is going to change me. And what comes out might be nasty. It might be charming. It might be funny. It might be dark. But I'm just going to let it all happen. And every concert, of course, is a little bit different. Sometimes it's more positive, touchy-feely. Everybody, it's like a love festival up there. Great. But if it turns dark and weird, I'm going to make a dark and weird show. Because that's what has to happen. You have to let it amplify the truth that's buried deep inside you. So I love this. And I miss this so much. I realize my mental health suffers when I don't get to experience my Straflosigkeit every couple of weeks, you know?
Totally understand. For me, it's kind of weird to say chili right now to you because it more feels like I should say Mr. Gonzalez, but it's okay.
Maestro also works.
Maestro. Okay, I call you Maestro. Maestro, what I'm interested in is because you just said before the break that you kind of miss that feeling and mentally that is, working on you, that you're not on stage, that you can't switch into that machine or that other person that kind of goes with the flow. Do you sometimes have the feeling, because nowadays everybody is striving for more, for bigger, better. Is that something that you feel within yourself too? Because what I love about your concert was that the size was so perfectly chosen that everybody had to take part in that journey that you create on stage over there. You know, it wasn't possible to be quiet. If you say, guys, seriously, I want more of this or that, people react because everybody felt that you speak directly to that person. By a bigger audience, you kind of have the feeling to just stand there and enjoy, but not follow the things the maestro says. Is the size of a concert for you something that has at a certain stage the perfectness, or would you love to play stadiums?
No, I would rather play in the appropriate venue for what I do multiple times. So if I'm lucky enough to be able to sell out two concerts in a row, which I think was the case when you saw me in Munich, I did two shows that day. And that was great. They were both sold out and we had the chance to do it again. But my show, it's not only about the size, but my show has to happen in a venue where normally conservative, classical, and jazz music happens. So my show doesn't work in an art gallery. My show doesn't work in Berghain. So sometimes some string quartet will say, we want to take our conservative music into the cool place, Berghain. And I say, yeah, good for you. But for me, it's different. I have to take my crazy show and bring it to the conservative place. I have to take it to the place so that this strange combination of being respectful of the institutions of music while at the same time being disrespectful, This only works in a sacred place. A church of music is where I belong, because I am making such a comment on my love and hate for these churches mm-hmm. of music. I maybe in a perfect world, I would have been a musician who would say, the music is enough. I don't have to do anything on top to bring it to the audience. Maybe I would be idealistic and think this at an earlier time. But I live in the real world. And the real world is you have to bring people in and you have to give them a story. This idea of storytelling that makes the music more powerful. And if without the storytelling, the music only has its own power. And when I decided what kind of life I wanted to have, I wanted to live and live well from my music. And I wanted to have a big audience. And I wanted to feel like my music really reaches people. Then I knew I would have to start doing some storytelling. And it really took a long time for me to find the way to do this. You know, in my very early years, I don't know, maybe you don't know my very early years. I wasn't playing the piano yet. I was doing much more just like straight electro rap together with Peaches, with some of the digital hardcore guys in Berlin around the year 1999, 2000. And I was trying some very extreme things to get attention, really pushing what's possible on stage, making people hate me or shocking them, provoking them, things like this, to test the limits. And I was very lucky because this is before we had cell phone cameras. Not much of this exists on the internet. I had a kind of freedom to push as far as I wanted. And then around the time I started playing the piano in 2004 with the first solo piano album, I thought, okay, I have to take everything I learned about provoking and make sure that it's there, but never overshadows the music. The music has to be supported by provocation and entertainment, but it's very easy to suddenly be too much of a funny guy, too much of a big mouth, and then the music suddenly loses power. So to find that sweet spot where the music Absolutely. Has more power than before, it just took me some years. It probably took me till around 2011 or 12 until I felt I got the balance right on stage, in the media, and in my albums as well, to make sure that I find that that perfect balance.
But in the end, I think it's always about balance, because as you just said, I mean, you can have the heaviest laugh on an evening where you stand on the stage, but the more good jokes you do, the more the people expect good jokes, the less you will perform, because in the end, it's not working. You know, that's kind of highlights has to be set. There has to be a certain dramaturgy. Is that an English word even? There has to be a certain bow in an evening. And even if you say you kind of don't plan those evenings, or you don't plan every word you say, it is interesting how, and I think that really is maybe, I don't know whether you like the word entertainer for yourself, but what I really felt was, and that's what I laugh about, the best musicians that one can see, and I think you are one of them for me, certainly, is that you have that entertainment gene in yourself, because you kind of feel the balance of everything. You know, you do know when to play music, you do know when to get a guest on stage, you do know when to be harsh to the audience in a way that you say, I'm not satisfied with the way that you perform tonight. Because that was kind of, you know, there are a lot of people where I'd say, or a lot of artists where I'd say, you take that personally, but in a way, you kind of created an atmosphere before where you made me feel the way, even though I didn't felt like one of the guys that you were talking to in the moment, yet you say, I'm not satisfied with your performance here. But, you know, you made me feel, or you make people feel in a way that they think, oh, shit, he's not satisfied with my performance, but I'm so happy with what he's doing. I have a bad conscience. I have to perform better. And by the moment, and that's what I loved about you, too, because you know, at sometimes you go to on a concert, there is a the band playing or that solo artist playing, and you don't have that connection, and they just like, I mean, Rammstein maybe isn't an example that doesn't work here, because they just play song after song after song, because it's kind of an an art installation, what is happening there on stage. But what I love about you was you've been so honest with the people. You know, you kind of shared your feelings, not through your music, but personally too, in the way that you say, come on, guys, the more fun you have, the more fun I have, and the more fun I have, the more fun you have. And kind of, you know, that is kind of waving or shaking more and more, or you get step by step, the evening gets better and better and better. And that was something I've never heard from any other artist on stage, to be so honest in a way. Hello, you push me, I push you, you push me, I push you. It goes back and forth all night, and we have the best night of all our evenings. That was something I really loved about that concert. You've just been so, let me say that, fucking honest with the people.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, the Straflosigkeit applies to this too, because it seems like a barrier you're not supposed to cross. And I see musicians, friends of mine, get off stage and go, oh God, I didn't like them at all. I'm like, well, why didn't you say something?
Yeah.
Come on, say something. They want the night to work, you know? And so I just make sure that, you know, if I can be crude again, I make them come first, and then I'm able to demand that they reciprocate, you know? it's like you say that I can't start by saying that, of course. I have to feel it. And sometimes I don't have to say it because the people are wild from the beginning, and then I'm really happy. And then I don't have to say anything. That's also great. But if I'm not having fun, then of course I want to save it. I want to at least do my best and try everything that I can try. So usually it starts with the music. If I feel the music isn't enough, there is a moment I'll speak to them, and I might try to charm them at first, maybe make them laugh a little bit, maybe touch them a little bit. And then I'll play some more music, and then I sort of wait. And there is a moment where I'm like, okay, I'm not really able to let go with these people. Now I have to turn to, you know, the secret weapon, let's call it, which is the raw honesty of saying, look, I want something from you too.
Yeah. And in the end, you know, sometimes it is, I've never been, the one thing that I hate about myself is when Elton John did his, maybe not last tour, I hope there's some chance to see him one more time, but I would have loved to see him. But you know, in a way, it's always good if there is somebody on stage who is creating an atmosphere between, I am the big, huge star and I can entertain you. And that is even, you know, by the size of the stage already clear by the moment you enter the stadium. And there's a different expectation, I guess. And you're more willing to, that's what I meant regarding the size of your audience. There's a more willing moment to go crazy, and even a more willing moment to just be very boring on a concert because you are in that anonymous mass. But what I really think is crazy about your concerts, that you also feel that energy is not coming from, you know, you sit there on stage with your piano and there are obviously loudspeakers, but you kind of have the feeling that you're hearing all the energy coming out of that piano. And that I'm not playing one instrument, and I'm not, I don't say musically in any way, I can't sing, at least that's what people say about me. me personally, I think I can sing beautifully. But what I love is,
well,
that
look, you don't have to sing as often as Jan Böhmermann. That guy sings too much.
no, obviously. But in a way, he's doing better. And that's why maybe he's doing it more often. But what I just want to say is that I love the fact that you are just there with your piano, and you are creating an atmosphere that some people need, I don't know, 50 people on stage for. You know what I mean? And that is something, what I think is maybe the most precious moment that can exist is one person and the instrument, and that's it. And that's, I think what I love about the piano, and then that is you sitting in front of it, that just makes, for me personally, everything perfect. But what I love to know is, and then it's, maybe I stop telling you how much I love what you do. What I love to know is, I remember you've been working, tell me I'm wrong, with Daft Punk and Drake, right?
That's
was
right.
That the two? How is that if these worlds collide? Because I think you're from Canada and Drake is from Canada, is that right?
Yes.
You're both Canadian. Is that enough to say, hello, we're both from Canada, you do music, I do music, let's do something together? Or how does that work? And then the Daft Punk thing, I mean, obviously they just stopped their career. I laughed at Daft Punk as much as one can love music. Is it that you are, and that's maybe two questions in one, is it that you are starstruck in a way, or is that, and that's something I always was interested in, and now can I finally ask it, is that the musical skill set that each one of you brings to the table just makes you, what is Augenhöhe in English, that you meet on the same level of skills, and that just makes you very easy if you meet one another?
Well, I would say that when I'm working with such big established artists, you know, I'm friendly with them, but I wouldn't say we're friends or anything.
Okay, yeah.
Anything, yeah. Like a musical family. So musical family for me would be people like Peaches and Leslie Feist, yeah. The singer Feist, or Jarvis, yeah. Cocker, who I've worked, yeah. with for about 12 years, and we made a whole album together in 2017 called Room 29. I worked with, yeah. Peaches hundreds of times. I worked on all the Feist albums. There are people that
I love Feist too. Oh, crazy. Dude.
Very, yeah. close friendships with. We all knew each other in Canada, and we're always staying in touch and meeting when we can and playing each other music and following each other's personal lives very closely. And this is a small group of 6-7 musicians. Each of those musicians probably has another 3 or 4 people they work with. And it's like extended musical family. And that goes very deep. And that feels very equal and very, it's impossible to keep track of who helped who when, because it's constant. Maybe you have this also with some of your collaborators, because it has to go so deep, and you had a social life and a professional life that grew together, and you witnessed each other go through these changes and deal with the first getting your dreams coming true moments. And this is so intimate and wonderful. And it's very different when I end up with Drake, mm-hmm. or Daft Punk, because I'm trying to just be useful in a very narrow slice of what they might need me for.
Ah, crazy. Yeah.
I don't pretend to be conceptually equal with them, because they have their whole planets and their musical families, and I'm a guest in their musical family. I just have a passport that lets me go in and spend literally 4 or 5 hours, and they're going to tell me much more specifically than you could ever imagine what they want me to do. And they listened. Right. They've listened to my albums. They've seen me live. They know what I'm capable of. And so usually it's kind of like calling the musical plumber. I'm going to come and unplug, yeah. their cords or something. It really feels very utility based. And that's how I like it. I don't pretend that I would be able to say, hey, boys, maybe you should take off the robot masks this album, or like, hey, Drake, enough with the singing. You know, I mean, it's like.
But you know, it would be worth a try to see how they react, just for the. But maybe you're not the first one doing that joke.
But just for the record, those guys are really ugly without their masks on. Really ugly. I understand. I understand why they wore them.
I totally got it. Totally got it. Yeah.
So you know, there is that difference, and it's really fun to play on a Daft Punk album and then to get a Grammy for it. But it doesn't, yeah. touch me in the same way that the deeper, totally, long-term, yeah. relationships, which were some of the most influential and important things in my life, was to meet Peaches and have her show me, bring things out of me that weren't there before, and hopefully vice versa. And that is so precious. And whether or not it's visible, you know, it's not so much maybe about, am I playing the piano on the last Peaches album, but I'm always involved in every Peaches album, because, yeah. I'm involved in her life, and she's involved in all of my albums because she's involved in my life. And that's a great thing. When we hang out, the line between what you might consider work or talking about work. But I think it's very similar with comedians. I mean, you're always hanging out, being funny, testing things out on each other, even whether you know it or not. The ideas come to you with the people that you have that rapport with. And that's so precious. And then maybe you'll end up, you know, having some guest on your show who's also very funny, but it's not like they're your close friend, and you have good chemistry and it makes for a good bit, but it's not going to compete with like the intimacy of you with your closest friends that you have that like secret language with. Am I right?
No, absolutely. You're totally right. But I think I love what you just said, because it feels like more like family with the people around you that really are influential on a daily basis. You know, that's a really like friendship. What you just said, where Drake and Daft Punk, you wouldn't say your best friends. You're kind of friendly to each other, and or at least you know each other. Maybe that's the writer thing. But what I love about the fact is that you just said you have an everyday life with all the others, and that has a huge impact on the way you behave, the person you are, the things you love, the things you do, the things that influence you due to that, influence you due to that on your music. Let us do a real quick break, and we'll be back in a second.
Okay, but because
time is ticking here.
Yoko, may I just, because on this topic, yeah. I have just one more thing I want to say.
Sure. Okay, sorry.
Before we lose it. So
yeah.
Sometimes people ask, how did it come about that you ended up with Daft Punk and Drake? And they wonder, is it some record company decision or how does it happen? And what I found so interesting is in both cases, it happened because of an accident. I ended up in a certain city at the right time and had some other reason to see those people or contact them. And while I was there, they sort of spontaneously said, hey, come to the studio. Not to play, just to visit. In both cases, I just went to visit. And by visiting, slowly an energy built up over a few hours where they said, hey, wait a second, maybe you can try to play something. So it's not like they plan it and send me a plane ticket and it's the big day and they know it.
Crazy.
You know, it's so much more accidental, spontaneous, and to do with the mood of the day than people could ever imagine. In one case, I missed a flight and ended up in LA by accident. If I hadn't missed this flight, no Daft Punk collaboration, no crazy. Grammy for Gonzo.
Crazy. My question. Do you personally, because what you just said before was interesting, that you know, that all happened by coincidence. Drake, Daft Punk, just you went there. It wasn't because I had the question ready to ask you how you felt when they asked you to come over in the way that the label reached you or something, that you personally thought, wow, now is the moment where something big is going to happen because I'm meeting Drake, I'm meeting Daft Punk. But obviously that was totally different. You just had a coincidence that made these things happen. But do you personally believe in things like, I don't know how to put it in English. Can I try to do it in German and you
sure.
tell me if you get a cool... Manchmal ist es ja so, dass man das Gefühl hat, dass Dinge einfach passieren, weil man irgendwie dieses zur richtigen Zeit, right time, right place, you know, maybe English is even better, the right time, right place thing, where you couldn't plan that this is happening, but you've just been kind of preparing all of your, let's say, career or life to fulfill that moment with perfectness. Is that something that you'd say, yeah, that
no.
fits, or is it
no? Because Daft Punk exists and their album will win the Grammys with or without me, and so like
I
said,
that you, yeah,
I'm trying to be useful to these musicians who I admire, and but the truth is, it doesn't touch me in the same way. I'm not starstruck because I know how unimportant I am in this. And I mean that not to be falsely modest, because I have a very big ego when I want to. And after rocking the crowd of a concert, I feel like a god. Let me tell you, I really do. I feel like I'm born to do this. I'm good at it. And I made 2,000 people have orgasms. And that is how I feel. Well, that's what I've been training for my whole life, is to do that. When I can do it, because that's a good quote.
I've been training my whole life to make 2,000 people an orgasm.
Because I did that. Whereas going to Daft Punk, sure, I contributed, but if I didn't miss that flight, the album still happens, and maybe some other piano player does just as good a job as me. I'm not saying I'm the only one who could make that part of what I did happen. So I choose the right moment to take real ego satisfaction and say, fucking right, you know, I'm the man tonight. But to be totally honest, when I left the Daft Punk studio or the Drake studio and I went home, I wasn't really walking on air exactly, because I also think, well, who knows what's going to happen with that? It happens so unceremoniously. Like I said, I'm just sitting in the studio and they go, oh, maybe try something. So I don't even know if they're going to keep it. I'll probably just wait until 2 years later, and then I'll be, oh, okay, I guess they used something from what I did in those 3 hours. But Yeah. The amount of satisfaction and feeling of destiny and unmovable fate and I feel like I exist. This is proof of my existence. Is much stronger when it's all mine, when it's my small world.
Okay, got
but
it.
But I'm just so in control of that world. That's the moment that I do it all for. And I just released an album last fall. It was a Christmas album called A Very Chilly Christmas.
Very Chilly Christmas. I've heard it all December long.
Okay,
I wanted, you know, the thing is, for me, I wanted to listen to more. You know, my problem with Christmas, I'm a totally Christmas guy. I don't know. Are you a Christmas guy? Yeah, obviously.
Yes and no. As you can probably hear in my album, it's like a version of Christmas, you know.
Absolutely. But you know, my problem is with that kind of music, Christmas music, that you start listening to it by the first, like, let's say, colder evenings, and you destroyed that Christmas feeling so hard by the 24th of or 25th of December, because you've heard this music over and over again, or this music over and over again. And with your Christmas album, it was like, I waited till the week before Christmas because I wanted to listen to it over the Christmas days. And it was so hard for me because everybody wrote me, always said, hanging out here at my house Sundays, was like, why don't you put on Chilly because you love it so much? I was like, no, I can't. It will destroy my Christmas if I'm listening to it before. I loved it.
Great. Well, I only bring it up because it was the first time I released an album where I couldn't do the concerts. Yeah. And it was really difficult for me to not understand how the music meets the world. That's the moment that it's all oriented toward. I don't tour to support my albums. I make albums to support my tour, if you get my meaning.
Yeah,
and the artwork is my concert, and the
totally
the copy of the artwork is the album, and some people see it the other way. And so it's been really frustrating to not have that outlet where that's where the music really happens. So even the nice moments of like, oh, I'm the album of the week in Der Spiegel this week, you know, and people would be like, great news. And it just doesn't touch me. It doesn't touch me unless I'm seeing it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. It's very difficult for me to really get to that zone where I'm like walking on the clouds as an artist, unless I'm sweating and seeing it happen before my very eyes and feeling it. So I'm always going to be in some way frustrated or disconnected from any good thing that happens that's not happening in a concert hall, is the truth.
I love the way how you know, in a way, the way you speak about your music is even more beautiful than only listening to it. You know, no, really, because the humbleness that you kind of have, I always love people who are, in my eyes, crazy successful in what they do, or maybe one of the best that exist out there in what they're doing. But in the end, they are, like you said, your ego can be very big after a concert. But by the moment that you talk about it, I feel like, you know, there is nothing special, knowing that there is so much special about you.
Well,
I love the fact that you don't see yourself so special. I think is a very unique thing.
Well, I don't see myself as special when I'm in the studio with Daft Punk, but when I'm on stage,
absolutely,
I'm the most special person in the world. It's, you know, it's possible to be arrogant and humble at the same time, and I am both. I'm a real snob. I don't think a lot of my fellow musicians. I'm very critical. I feel like there's a lot of taking the easy way, there's a lot of pretending to be a good person these days in what people do as artists. And I feel very strongly that we shouldn't try to pretend to be good people. We should just be people. That means we do good, bad things all the time, good and bad. We say annoying things. We say arrogant things, but we also say humble things. It's always a mix, I think. And I get frustrated when the musicians try to behave too well. And so thank you for saying that I have the capability of being humble, but I also have the capability of being arrogant and snobbish and judgmental and critical and jealous and threatened by other musicians and krolle, full of grudges.
Grauenvoll, yeah.
You know, so... I think all of those things are what make me a person, and all of those things make me an artist. So I don't want to pass by any of those. So humble, yes, but among many other qualities of various qualities.
Ah, crazy. Right now, we are at the time that you said you have an appointment. I don't know whether, you know, that now the German is coming through, even though
I have 4 more minutes.
You've got 4 more minutes. Okay, I love that. What's your favorite dish?
I like very, very spicy Sichuan Chinese food. So there's a kind of dry fried green beans with pork and some chilies, or there might be some very spicy chicken with these special Sichuan peppers, and they make your lips almost taub when you eat them, and or maybe dumplings in very spicy Sichuan oil. But I like to attack my stomach with spice.
I love the pictures that you're painting by the time you're talking. You like to attack your stomach. Okay, got that.
And of course, I'm Canadian, so I like to make French toast with maple syrup and bacon, what you Germans might call Arme Ritter, but is something a little bit different. I like very much to eat big Canadian Baumfeller-style breakfasts.
Yeah, I was so sad. Maybe I have to tell you one story. You wanted to play last year's January 13th, I think you played in Vancouver, could that be? Or no, Toronto?
Oh, yeah, I was in Canada last winter, sure.
And the 13th of January is my birthday. And you played, you remember the city? You might not remember whether it was Toronto.
I think it was Montreal, if I'm not mistaken.
Montreal, it was Montreal even. Yeah, it was Montreal.
My hometown.
And my biggest dream was, and I couldn't come because I was recording a show, my biggest dream was to see that concert because I just love to, you know, be at the place where you feel home. And I was wondering how different that would be to Munich, but I didn't make it because I was standing in a studio myself working. And I was really sad about that. And since then, I mean, after that, obviously, kind of all that COVID shit started. And every artist was forced to stay at home. But I'm really, really much looking forward to the moment that I'm going to see you on stage again.
Well, I am going to, if everything goes, you know, remotely like people think it will, next January, I'm meant to play in Canada again, Montreal or Toronto. And I'll give you the date and I'll offer you a guest list place. Oh, and I can
I'll take it for a friend, but I would love to buy a ticket.
Well, I could also say that we can then go for a very spicy Sichuan meal. And you should also...
And then you're going to see me die because I can't take spicy.
Okay, well, you should experience Canada in the winter. It might be minus 20 or 25 degrees if you come in middle of January in Canada. It's a beautiful thing. And I actually miss it, spending my winters in Germany sometimes. I miss that extreme cold. I hope you make it soon as well. I also hope to come and play on your show because I love being on television, and my German is, I think, just good enough that it wouldn't make everybody change the channel in 5 seconds.
I think everybody's going to love what you do. I can only say everybody who hasn't seen it, maybe because that's something I love too. On Eins Live, you have a really nice format. Everybody can watch it on YouTube where you explain the secrets, and that's what you also do on parts of your show when one sees you live, where you explain the secrets of, for instance, Britney Spears and stuff. It's crazy how you explain the magic of her songs on the piano. Everybody who hasn't seen it, Chilly Gonzalez, put it onto YouTube, watch everything that he's done so far, but also watch these pieces on Eins Live. I do know you also had a book last year. Am I remembering that right? Or was it the year before?
No, last fall I wrote
last
a book.
Fall, yeah. I'm kind of, YouTube covered, I'm not certain whether it was last year or the year before.
No, it was last fall. It's a book that's part of a series called Music Bibliothek, where people write about other artists. And I wrote about Enya, the Irish New Age singer. And it was translated by our common friend, Sophie Passmann. She was my German voice. So,
crazy.
Yes.
Yeah. But also, everybody who hasn't read or heard that, go for it. I learned that you said you could call yourself Gonzo. I wouldn't have known that. So Gonzo, I can't thank you enough for that you took your time. I was really, by the moment I realized that this your voice talking there to me, a dream came true. Thank you very much. Seriously.
Thank you. Really, but now I have honored to ask you, After I hang up, you have to just wait in silence for 15 minutes, okay? Because that's what I had to do. That's what I had to do at the beginning.
It will be that the podcast will go on for 50 minutes. It will be like the hidden track on a CD back in the days. And then I will say thank you in some personal words again. Gonzo, sorry for not being late, but not being capable of the technical side of the podcast.
Alles gut, mein Kumpel. Danke, Joko.
Danke dir. I know that kind of always sounds like a professional entertainment sentence, but I appreciated it so much that you took the time. You have no imagination.
My pleasure. Okay.
Thank you.
Speak soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ladies and Gentlemen, an der Stelle noch ganz kurz der Hinweis. Diese Folge wurde natürlich präsentiert von O2, dem sehr guten Netz zum sehr guten Preis. Vielen Dank.
Ah, Leute, jetzt ist die Viertelstunde rum. Ich danke fürs Hören bis zum Ende. Ich muss sagen, ich bin immer noch total geflasht davon, dass das, ich weiß nicht, ob man das gemerkt hat oder nicht, aber ich liebe Maestro oder Gonzo für die Art von Musik, die er macht. Jetzt habe ich den Menschen noch ein bisschen besser kennengelernt und bin ein noch größerer Fan, als ich es vorher war. Die einzige Sache, über die ich mir tatsächlich die letzte Viertelstunde Gedanken gemacht habe, ist der Satz von wegen, ich setze sie auf die Gästeliste und ich habe gesagt, so, nee, ich möchte mir ein Ticket kaufen, ob das ein bisschen zu frech war. We will see. Danke, dass ihr euch die Zeit genommen habt, hier bis zum Ende zu hören. Ich hoffe, dieses kleine Schlussstatement ist eine Belohnung. Wir hören uns nächste Woche wieder, dann zusammen mit Paul. Und ich sag mal so, bis bald. Tschüss, danke.